On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we take the high road to 13th century Scotland and look for Christian themes in Mel Gibson's Braveheart. What can we make of William Wallace being discipled by his uncle? Is this what makes him a better encourager, like Barnabas? All that and more in 3, 2, 1... Come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode 33. I'm Michael.
Boy, and I'm a Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Seamus, Hamish, Hamish.
Hamish. Oi, hello, Michael. Greetings from Agusland.
Yeah, there you go. How are you today?
Oh, I am a bit woozy.
Are your legs a bit cold, lad?
This crazy Tennessee weather.
Wearing the kilt. It's been freezing, literally.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I sent out a post, an update on Facebook yesterday. I said, you know, with all this practice, when the real winter arrives, it's going to be a real doozy.
And, you know, according to Game of Thrones fans, winter is coming.
Don't know anything about Game of Thrones.
Okay, all right. I don't either. I just know the memes. Anyway.
No, all the memes. What have you been up to? How about NaNoWriMo?
Oh, Michael, I just got bad news. What? It's not going to happen this year.
No. But you got a running start for next year.
I got a running start for next year, baby. It's not going to happen. I didn't anticipate the workload of 1,700 words a day. And with the schedule I got right now, it's just, I'm sorry, all you NaNoWriMo enthusiasts may not count that as an excuse.
Well,
or if you do, it's a very pitiful one. And you know what? That's fine. You can do that. But I've made my decision. I'm out. I'm sorry. You guys, I'm passing the torch to
you. Yes. Letting others pick up the slack.
Yes.
Hey, well, I see that you're participating in Movember.
Movember?
Yeah. That's all of November. You don't shave for your mustache?
Well, I mean, there's no shave November, but so I shaved. But my what? Wait,
I thought you were Mr. Meme.
I'm trying something different with my life.
Hey, speaking of something different, Thursday we record on Thursdays. As soon as we were done recording episode number 32 of Finding Christ in Cinema, what did we talk about the last episode? Inkheart,
yeah.
We immediately hopped on Skype. What?
Oh, well, Inkheart, because we love duct tape.
Oh, well, I'm not prepared for any of this stuff.
Love duct tape.
Yeah, well, Andy Serkis does. And then we immediately hopped on Skype and joined our fellow ministers, our digital ministers and missionaries from GCT Network, the guys from the Theonauts podcast, and had a great time with them on their shortest episode ever.
Yeah, shortest, if you mean longest, then yeah.
Now, last episode, Brendan, we were doing the time travel thing, and so we were trying to fool people into believing that we had already done Theonauts show, because it was released before our show.
It was released the Thursday that we recorded it.
Yes.
And we released the Friday
after we record.
Fact. Yes.
So what did we talk about? Let's highlight a couple of things and encourage everybody to listen to that show.
Well, we talked about how Christians should and should not behave online.
Yeah.
Especially regarding political issues.
Socio-political
issues.
Yeah. How did you feel about the episode?
I felt like, honestly, I will say, I felt like at times we kind of got ourselves in a circle a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, kept going round and round the mulberry bush. But I still think it's a good, solid episode for people to listen to.
And why? What are some highlights? I mean, what do you think that it can do in order to benefit Christians out there?
Well, if anything, it can edify people. It can demonstrate how we can be better representatives of God's kingdom on even online,
right.
With people that we have relationships with online, friends, family, coworkers, church family members, all those people and all these interactions online, they do have power.
Oh yeah, that's people. Why we use the word interpersonal dynamics.
Ooh,
right.
Ooh, that's a.
That's a loaded
personal dynamics. That's an $8 one.
Hey, I'll take it. So everybody, we encourage you to get over to gctnetwork.com and look for the episode "How Christians Behave Online." We think that you will find it stimulating talk at the very least, and hopefully we'll give you some things to think about and some armor. To use as you are out online dealing with Christians and non-Christians alike. Brendan, what else have you done all week besides freeze?
Well, been getting ready for some Christmas caroling.
Ah, what? Okay, so what's going on?
Okay, well, for the past, I would say, 6 years now, some friends and I, we like to join together and go Christmas caroling. We'll go to Legends where I work.
Uh-huh.
And, well, Christmas Carol, and then Legends graciously provides with the meal.
Hey, nice.
And we do, we actually do a couple of Christmas programs out in the community as well. This year we're looking at going to some nursing homes as well, because we've never gone to nursing homes before.
Oh, now that is...
Oh yeah,
I know you've sung at nursing homes, but to do at Christmas time, it is all that much more special.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
We're getting plans for that. And we'll probably fill you in more as that goes on.
Okay. And we have, hopefully we'll remember at the end of this episode to talk a little bit more about our Christmas plans here on Finding Christ in Cinema.
True, yeah.
So nothing else? It's been a slow week?
Well, no.
Oh.
I finally got that Interstellar review.
Yeah, oh, all the kids say? You agonized over this article like none other I'm aware of.
I did, and... Wednesday night, I always try to have the articles up each Thursday morning. This past Wednesday night, I had over 1,000 words up, and I scrapped them all.
The air got to it,
yes. And it meaning my brain, and I was just, like, I was digging holes and just digging deeper and deeper with not seeing a way out unless I just scrapped the whole thing.
Oh,
babbling,
my goodness.
Bumbling band of baboons.
That's what I felt like, Maggie. That's what I felt like.
So, but you were able to pull everything back together.
Yes.
Were you able to, like, gravity, just some gravity pulling it all back together?
You could say gravity had an effect in it. You could also say, I kind of wish I had a wormhole to travel back through. And no, that's not a spoiler.
Okay, now I was just talking to you before we hit record that I was afraid of your article because I don't know anything about Interstellar. I haven't seen it yet. I did read the opening paragraph, and then I see the word wormhole. I said, I'm reading no more, and then I skip all the way down to the bottom to find your conclusion. And now you assured me that I can read your article and not be spoiled. It is none of these.
No.
Okay.
but let me clarify, though. I tend to really think about trailers and how they set up a film. And from trailers, I can usually guess what's going to happen.
Okay.
Some people like to, you know, not worry about trailers and take on the movie, you know, with a fresh mind.
Right.
That's cool. That's just not my style. So when I say there's no spoilers, I mean you can watch the trailers and get a feel for what's going to happen.
Okay.
Also, you can deduce from the IMDb cast list of the film certain time jumps.
Ah.
If you know what I mean there, all you time traveling time lord buddies. I'm just saying, I tried to keep it spoiler free, but then again, my definition of spoiler free may not be the same as yours, Michael. So I would say you're still safe in reading it because I don't give away the major plot stuff.
Okay, what else has been going on as I'm rearranging these news stories that we forgot to do?
Oh, sorry about that. Well, mine are in order the way I want mine.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I think that's about it. Do you want to save our Christmas plans for the end of the episode?
Give a little tease.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, but
I need this thing to move.
We're planning on establishing some evergreens, as you like to put it.
Yes,
some movies, some films that we want to return to each year, because let's face it, each year at Christmas we do return to these movies and rewatch them, and honestly, I get something new out of them every time. There are those, like, I'm talking about, what's the first one we're thinking about? Christmas Carol, Patrick Stewart, the movie he made for TV. We're looking at that one the week after Thanksgiving. And then, most likely, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
See, all these staples that come into television and movies each year, we're going to visit them and hopefully revisit them in the future.
Yes. You know what? I can't move these around. Are you ready for some you ready for some real news?
Aye. Roll it.
Aye.
From HollywoodReporter.com, Mike Nichols dies at 83. Legendary Hollywood man Mike Nichols passed away this past Wednesday via cardiac arrest at 83 years old. Nichols' directorial credits include iconic staples like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Graduate, The Birdcage, Closer, and Charlie Wilson's War. But Nichols wasn't limited to cinema. In fact, he has an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. Collectively known as the very elusive, very exclusive EGOT, which are rarely found in Hollywood these days.
What's an EGOT?
Well, an EGOT is the collective title of the awards of Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
So it's kind of like a hat trick in the hockey world, right?
I don't
Finding Christ in hockey?
I don't watch hockey. I don't play hockey either. Now, several stars that have worked with Nichols have since mourned his passing via social media and public statements. Steven Spielberg says, Mike was a friend, a muse, a mentor, one of America's all-time greatest film and stage directors, and one of the most generous people I've ever known. Julia Roberts, she says, in every way, he was remarkable and amazing. His musings were like pearls. His jokes were timeless and perfectly placed. His stories, detailed and wholly entertaining. His warm embrace was where you wanted to live forever.
Wow, those are some accolades.
But I think Tom Hanks, I think FCC's own Tom Hanks says it best.
Okay.
Regarding where do we go from here after losing such a man. Using Nichols' own words, forward. We must always move forward. Otherwise, what will become of us?
Hmm.
That ends the quote. And that ends Hanks quoting Nichols. And then Tom Hanks continues. He changed the lives of those who knew him, who loved him, and who will miss him so.
Wow. Did you mention he was married to Diane Sawyer?
I did not.
Yep, married to Diane Sawyer. So our thoughts and prayers go out to her. I read John Carney, FCC's very own John Carney, when he was a youngster, attended a church in Louisville that I think it was Diane Sawyer's family were members of.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how we're connected to. So we are
all right.
Vicariously.
Kevin Bacon was right.
Yes.
Six degrees
all the way there. Okay, now I don't know. This one might be or have gone under the radar, Brendan, but I can't remember and I can't really track back the genesis of this. But from Deadline.com, Phil Lord and Chris Miller talk Batman Lego movie.
First try.
During a recent interview with the directors behind Clouded with a Chance of Meatballs, the Lego Movie, and the 21 Jump Street films, they dropped a couple of bits of Lego Movie sequel news, including a Lego Movie Batman spinoff.
first try.
Now, according to Miller, quote, rest assured that every era of Batman filmmaking will be acknowledged. There have been so many interpretations of Batman, and there is so much to play with there. There are 40 versions of his origin story alone. I just hope that they get, what's his name, Will Arnett.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure they will.
The Lego Movie 2 is set for a 2018 release. The Lego Batman Movie will be coming out February 10th, the new magic year of
2017.
Yes, and you can also look for, this will make one my my second youngest daughter, Ninjago will hit cinemas October 14th of the old magic year.
2016.
No excitement for that anymore?
Not anymore.
Are we done?
I think we're done with 2016. Empire Online is reporting that Paul Greengrass is set to head a new adaptation of George Orwell's 1984. Tell me about it, Michael. Tell me.
What are
you feeling?
Well, right now, I'm excited because the first movie, 1984's 1984, was...
Right.
Well, it was a disappointment in that so much was left out of the book, you know, the classic complaint. But
yeah.
the cinematography was... it's iconic. It's iconic.
Yeah.
And also, John Hurt... Oh,
good old Winston.
So I don't now. I'm seeing whose name was I seeing? Matt Damon attached to this film?
No.
Okay, clear that up for me.
Okay. Paul Greengrass. He is set to head the new adaptation, but after he finishes the new installment of the Jason Bourne saga.
Okay.
That's how that's related with, and that's with Matt Damon.
Well, now for my own to cover up for me there, I read some comments on one of the boards, you know, one of
why
the blogs.
Why did you do that? Why did you
read comments? I'm dumb. And so somebody had me confused on that. But are you familiar with the first adaptation, 1984 is 1984?
I am not.
Okay.
Only from reading about it in history textbooks.
What? Oh, my gosh. Got,
does that make you feel old, Michael?
I don't think that we can work together anymore. did you read the book?
No, okay. But here's why. In school, we had to choose between Animal Farm and 1984.
Well, there you go.
And our class chose Animal Farm.
Well, there you go.
So
hey, that counts.
I just haven't gotten back to it. I mean, it's on my list in perpetuity, but I just haven't got back to it yet.
Well, we'll give you credit for that. So I'm looking forward to, I am looking forward to this. I'm very excited about this story. I don't know anything about the people involved in it. And so I think that there is a lot, you know how I feel about Hollywood remakes?
Yeah.
I think that it shows a complete lack of original ideas in Hollywood.
Well, you know, there's only 15 scripts.
Is it 15?
Yeah. I think it's 15. Either 14 or 15.
I think that we need to identify those so that each movie that we could do, we could say this is script number.
Yeah.
Eight, you know, because I think that quite often.
That would be good.
Oh, the classic Man versus Nature, the classic,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But in You Can't Go Home Again story, you
right.
Know, all those things. I think that we had, that would be a good exercise here. Anyhow, getting back to You Can't Go Home Again, we'll see how 1984.
Well, talking about the people involved, just really quick, Scott Rudin. If his name doesn't sound familiar, he was the producer for The Truman Show, No Country for Old Men, Social Network. He's set to produce this adaptation. And here's what I'm liking. British playwright James Graham is set to write the screenplay.
Okay, now what piques my curiosity is, even though I don't appreciate the movie for how disturbing it is, No Country for Old Men, the darkness has to be portrayed in 1984.
Yeah.
It can't be a Truman Show.
No.
Which was a fine movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what was the third one that you mentioned?
Oh, the Social Network.
Yeah, I can't stand that movie. Oh, that movie was terrible. I don't know if there's any redeeming quality or value in that movie at all.
Well, Rudin and Graham are being involved in this adaptation. So.
Okay. Now, the final question is, what's it going to be called?
Hopefully 1984.
Well, that was a long time ago. And we all know that those events didn't pass the way that Orwell predicted them. But there's still time.
So then 2084.
There you go.
Hey.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. That is on the list of movies to watch. Deadline. No, no, no. FirstShowing.net. No visual effects used to complete Philip Seymour Hoffman's Mockingjay role, Brendan. After the death of Mr. Hoffman, director Francis Lawrence had to think quick in order to figure out how to handle the two-part finale. Hoffman was said to have finished most of his filming, but a few things remained incomplete. It was reported that visual effects would be used to recreate his likeness in order to complete his part. Now, it is being reported that no CGI of any kind was harmed in the making. No, the movie's rife with CGI. Specifically, no CGI was used to complete Hoffman's role. According to Lawrence, quote, "I just think to try to fake a Philip Seymour Hoffman performance would have been catastrophic, and I would never want to do that," unquote. Instead, they simply rewrote the film in order to fit the absence of Hoffman. And we'll have the chance to see him deliver this final performance this very weekend. What do you think? What do you think?
I mean, I think that's the good choice.
Specifically, the director saying it would have been catastrophic to try to mimic, you know, with computers. Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
And I agree. Yeah. I agree. And I'm glad they actually rewrote it.
I read somebody on one of the blogs in the comments saying, "Yeah, think that second Matrix sequel with Jeff Bridges, them having to create a young Jeff Bridges face and stuff."
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, that movie, you know, that character was computer based. So
The Matrix?
I mean, not the Matrix.
I mean Tron.
Tron.
I was about to. Yeah.
Jeff Bridges' character in Tron.
For one episode, I'm not the first one that mulligans.
Oh! Hey, well, there you go. That's a record.
From Deadline.com, Sony Pictures gives Steve Jobs biopic the turnaround, and Universal is trying to pick it back up.
What?
Yes, there was a... there was another Steve Jobs biopic, this time based on the Walter Isaacson biography, the best-selling biography, that is.
Right.
And Sony had actually already acquired Michael Frank Fassbender for that role.
That's your Breaking Bad guy?
No, what?
Oh, I don't know.
No, Frank being the papier-mâché head.
Oh, Frank. Okay,
that Frank.
Yes.
That Frank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Frank.
they had already courted Fassbender into playing Jobs, and Aaron Sorkin wrote the screenplay for it. However, the project was dropped this week by Sony, and Universal is quickly trying to get it under their belt.
I wonder if that has anything to do. You know, it was rumored that Christian Bale was going to play the role.
Yeah.
And I heard people even in the tech community say, you know, Christian Bale, his temperament is perfect for Steve Jobs. Who cares if he doesn't look like him? He's got a bad temper.
Right.
But Christian Bale, to his credit, said, "I'm not taking that role. I can't play that guy. That's not the role for me." Well, because, you know, they're throwing fat cash at him, Brendan, for him to say, "Nah, I can't do that role."
He'd rather play Moses.
I'm Moses. First try.
And the film's moving on with producers. Oh, here he is again. Scott Rudin.
Oh.
Scott Rudin, Christian Coulson, Mark Gorman, and Guymon Cassidy. Have no idea who those guys are, but that's what Deadline's saying.
Okay, there you go. Hey, now for our brand new segment that we started last week, a quick rundown of the articles posted on the Finding Christ in Cinema Facebook page this past week. And you can see all those in all their glory at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema.
Hot off the press, FCC's review of Christopher Nolan's Interstellar.
Hey, where did I hear that about that before?
I don't know. It sounds so familiar. Pitch Perfect 2 is happening, and Anna Kendrick, Rebel Wilson, and Brittany Snow have the scoop. Star Wars trailer with the new Hobbit film?
It's been debunked.
Oh, man. That's a shame.
Yeah.
Disney's Cinderella trailer.
Ooh.
And what Kenneth Branagh says about it. Kenneth Branagh being the director.
Okay,
there
you go.
Okay, that's why he's important. Let's see. Mockingjay may be the biggest debut of 2014. The new trailer for the Peanuts movie.
Oh, it was fun.
Oh, yes. It was really cool. And to be preceded by the photos that were released from the picture that Monday. Oh, and look. Brendan and Michael were guests on the latest episode of Theonauts podcast.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss it, baby. And I think that rounds us out.
All right. Our quick rundown of Facebook page updates. Again, follow us over there at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema. Keep up with all the latest from Tinseltown, and then we'll use that later on to find Christian themes in it and that you can use in your personal ministry. Brendan Taylor, are you ready? Are you ready to go to the movies?
Oh, hey, let's go.
Aye.
I love you. Always have. I want to marry you.
And I you. You and no other.
I came back home to raise crops and a family. If I can live in peace, I will.
We will be more merciful than they have been. We'll spare the women and the children. For all else, no mercy.
I want this Wallace's heart on a plate.
Where are you going?
I'm going to pick a fight.
Well, you didn't get dressed up for nothing.
Go back to England and tell them Scotland is free.
This one will fight forever.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Every man dies. Not every man really lives.
Uh-huh. There you go.
That is an amazing trailer. You know what's neat about the trailer is there's a lot of the scenes that were cut out of the final cut.
The final edit.
Edit.
Yeah.
Are in the trailer. And okay. So it makes it pretty interesting. So if you had seen the trailer before going to see the movie, you wouldn't even realize that those weren't in the film because it would just add to the story.
Right.
Brendan... For the second time in a row, Brendan, you have sinned.
Oh.
You've missed the mark.
You know what?
In a grand way.
You know what?
Okay, Brendan, how many times have you seen... When's the first time you've seen Braveheart?
This past week.
How in the world... First Lord of the Rings, and now Braveheart? I mean, Brendan, they are on the same league of epicness, of... amazing storytelling, of inspiration. What?
That's what? Probably why I haven't made the time to see him, Michael.
Oh, man.
Braveheart alone is 2 hours and 57 minutes.
Of glorious. Okay, so what are your thoughts?
Oh, I loved it, though. I really did. I loved the scope of it. I love that it's... Okay, first of all, story, done. I love that it started with him as a kid, with Wallace as a kid.
Which was an afterthought. Did you know that?
I did not. Yeah. See, I don't know the trivia behind it, Michael.
Well, I've been reading up this week.
I didn't grow up with this movie.
I've done my homework.
When was it made? In the 50s? back when you were swinging?
Nice.
Making paper mache flowers or artificial flowers, whatever.
That was you.
Whatever you that said was you. I was doing.
And for more on that, listen to the Finding the Theonauts episode number 31.
Anyway, but I love that aspect. I love the music.
Oh, yes.
The music. Yeah. Just to get it out of my head because I keep thinking about it.
I put
music.
The soundtrack in my wish list, in my Amazon music wish list.
There you go. Oh, man. See, that's... I love... I'm really careful about using this word, but I think it applies. But how visceral the movie is in the battle scenes.
Right.
And even... Oh, when... When in the beginning, when he walks into the barn as a little kid,
yes,
and he sees
everybody hanging.
Oh, then they're not just hanging around; they're
right,
dead.
Right,
they've been punished by
the
English.
Hey, getting back to the battle scenes, they had to cut out all kinds of content.
That doesn't surprise me.
In order to get the rating that they wanted.
Yeah.
But one thing that they did was remove so many, you know, frames of film. They would remove a frame to give it a jittery, you know. And they were investigated by animal rights guys. Hey, you guys are killing horses left and right.
Horses. Oh, man.
They were mechanical horses. Oh. And it was filmed in such a way, and the effect was so impressive that I guess even to this day, Mel Gibson has a... I'll give $5 to anybody that can point out the fake horses. And he's never given out $5.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, the big old investigation.
And they're going to make spears as big as the trees.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Twice as tall as a man.
Twice as tall. That's what it is. Yeah, because he was looking up as the trees, up at the trees, as he said it. Spears twice as tall as man.
Yep. Whew, I've seen this movie so many times, and it is one of my all-time favorites. It ranks right up, of course, Lord of the Rings, but also...
Lord of the Rings.
Gladiator.
I have seen.
What? Put it on the list. That's one of my all-time favorite movies.
I thought it was on the list.
Put it on the list. And it's because of the story of sacrifice and the story of, you know, no matter what the cost, you do what's right. You know, a beautiful storytelling. Now, from a storyteller's perspective, now talk for a moment on Braveheart.
Well, I kind of did already.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. Like how it starts.
Why does it work? What is it? I mean, what? Talk about some of those eternal themes.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about some themes, Michael.
Yeah.
Let's see. There is a theme of sacrifice. There's the theme of, and I would say the exclusively Christian theme of the last being first.
Yeah.
And the first being last, especially with the whole... The Scottish clansmen overpowering the English throne. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about a chief cornerstone destroying the statue.
Hey.
Oh, should have thought of that.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
I'll see. Hold on. What else is there? There's the theme of the love.
Yeah.
Of faithful love. Not only between William and... I forget how you say her name. Miron?
Yeah.
Miron?
Her real name in real life was Marion, but they didn't want, the movie makers didn't want to get confused with Robin Hood and made Marion.
Yeah. Okay. So.
I did a lot of reading this week.
See, you know all this trivia. You know all this trivia, yes. And you're asking me the questions.
What about transition? You know, I guess we're going to touch on that on your point, huh?
Yeah,
transition.
We're gonna talk about that.
And these are themes; they're classic, timeless themes. It's almost correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you studied the trade. You can almost you can start with a formula. It's like a formula or a recipe or a tree or like a skeleton that you just start hanging beautiful adornments on. Right?
Right.
I mean, so if you say, "Hey, we need this story to have these classic themes in it," now we're gonna work around that and create. You know, something beautiful. This touches on, and I think so, for me, so powerfully on some of those classic themes in storytelling that move you. And that's why at the end of the movie, I'm in tears. Yeah. I mean, like my eyes hurt, man. Yeah. It's like, whoa, that's too much. Too much.
Especially as he's looking out in the crowd and he sees Hamish.
Yes.
Oh, and I'm going to be honest, I forgot the other guy's
name. Well, we have IMDb.
It's that crazy Irish guy, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, like who believes he was sent by God to protect him, yes. And then ends up almost being right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Incidentally, one of only two genuine Scotsmen that were in the film, and he plays an Irish guy.
Well, no. One of the actors we'll talk about, he's actually Scottish.
I know. It's one of two real-life Scots. And the crazy guy plays an Irishman. He's Scottish in real life.
Well, then who's Brendan Gleeson?
He's Irish.
Oh, he's Irish?
Yeah.
Oh, he does a fine Scotsman then.
Well.
he had me fooled.
You didn't give the proper introduction to him.
Well, excuse me. Brendan.
No.
FCC. Oh, FCC's very own Brendan Mad-Eye Gleeson.
Yes.
Oh, man. He was so good.
Yep. Well, okay, so talk about some of the actors then.
Okay. Well, first, let's just get him out of the way. Mel Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just talk about him.
He did not want to play the role.
No, and that's the thing.
He felt he was too old. But the movie company said, we're not doing this movie unless you star in it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And he directed it, too. So I know that kind of pressure when you're having to direct something that you're also starring in.
Yeah.
And or at least acting in. Very, very carefully done on Gibson's part. And I honestly think it would not have the same effect if he didn't do it.
Brendan Gleeson was born in Dublin, Ireland.
Okay, I believed you the first time, oh. Michael.
You gave me the Mad-Eye Moody look, like I was crazy or
no,
something.
No, that's just how I look every day.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so let's talk about Brendan Gleeson for a little bit.
Yes.
Yes, good old Hamish. Good old buddy Hamish.
He, you know, I knew he was in the film, but for some reason, you know, I'm used to seeing Mad-Eye Moody. I'm used to seeing him in his older age, and now especially right. because his son, Dom,
I think it's like Dom Hull.
Yeah.
Like Dommel.
He's up and coming. Yeah. He's really doing, you know, of course he was in the Harry Potter movies, but such a, you know, such a small bit part.
Right.
But he's really, you know, moving on and staking his own claim in the cinematic, in cinematic history right now. And so I always think of Brendan as an old guy. As he is now, you know, we talk often, Brendan, off camera and with the mics off about that one of the most recent films that he did, Calvary, where he plays a priest. That I don't know, hilarity ensues. You know,
no, I don't think it's a comedy.
Oh, okay,
I don't think it's a comedy.
So anyway, you know, when I'm looking, go, whoa, that's Brendan Gleeson right there.
And yeah, I didn't recognize him with the goatee. Yeah. That's what threw me off, the goatee and the receding hairline.
I think he does, one of the things that impressed me the most about him is his facial expressions.
Yeah.
He does a lot of fine acting just with his face. Did a really good job. Now, the gentleman that plays his dad, apparently they're only like 7 years apart in age.
How weird is that?
That is weird. Okay, but let's get to Longshanks.
Yes.
King Edward the First.
Patrick McCougan.
Man. I think he's the finest actor in the film next to somebody else that we'll get to here.
Right.
I would say that they're equal. Like when I'm watching the film, going, those are the two finest actors in this film.
Okay,
And I think that especially that first long scene that you get to see him in, where he's saying, you know, the problem with Scotland is it's full of Scots. The way he played that whole scene,
yeah,
was the timing was.
Yeah,
I mean, he was in control. He owned that whole scene.
I think even when he was sick and in the bed.
Oh,
at the end,
man,
there.
Yes, when she whispers into his ear.
Yeah, yeah. No, yes. Spoilers.
No spoilers. Yep.
But I mean, it's a historical fact that Longshanks did die of old age. So,
you know what? Why he's called Longshanks?
Was it because I never was it in the movie?
No.
Was it explained in the movie?
No.
Was it because his hair was like that?
Nope.
Okay, what
it's
is
actually,
it?
It's actually long legs. He was unusually tall for people at that age. In fact, reports that he reached 6'2". And back then, I mean, people, you know, diet wasn't very good. So men were,
right,
you know,
right.
Like 5'6". He was like King Saul.
Hey, there you go. You know,
so... Okay, let's get down to the Bruces.
I was just going to talk about one. Which one?
The only one that counts.
Okay, good. Angus McFadden.
Yes.
Who played Robert the Bruce.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Okay.
This guy.
What I
liked about him was how he could play. In him, I could see him playing the son that wants to please the father.
Mm-hmm.
Being torn by the other side that wants to do what's right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying those two things always oppose each other, but in this film they do with this character, and he plays it well.
Being torn. Yes.
Yeah, that tearing.
Yeah. Being tossed about by every wind and doctrine. I really see in this film, I'm not going to touch on it, but I mean, because there are so many themes in here, like most of the movies that we review, we could talk about this over and over and over again, but there is a real theme of Judaizers in this film. And he is in a position where he's wanting to be pulled into law, back to the law.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to do these things. And but you can see he wants that freedom, and the interaction between he and William Wallace, you can see it in his face. You can see it in Angus's face. He's a phenomenal actor. I want to follow this man. I want to be like him. But yet he's saying that to me, that he wants to follow me. He wants me to spread my wings. I'm the guy to do it, and I believe it. And then the scene where he betrays William Wallace, his facial expressions.
Well, ooh, Michael, ooh, huh? What?
What?
I think there was a misrepresentation there. He didn't betray Wallace.
How? In what way?
His father did.
Oh, no. When he charges, when he is the knight charging with the...
Oh, you mean, I'm sorry, yes. I apologize. Okay. I went to another scene in the movie. Oh, I know, man. Where he's dressed as the English noble.
Yes. No, yes. He's the knight.
Well, oh, and yeah, he's...
He but knocks he's, Wallace allows but, him to... Yeah.
But he's in English garb, though. Okay. He's got the armor. Yeah, he's got the face.
I didn't catch that.
He's got the helmet.
That whole scene was like some of the greatest cinema in history.
Oh, I forgot all about that. Oh.
The look on his face, oh my goodness, and phenomenal acting. And then what got me the most, did we ever decide, does he have a theater background? Did we figure that out?
Yes, we did. Yes, hold on, I'm getting there right now.
Because theatrically trained actors, they're able to portray things. They're able to. There's something magic about it. To where when I'm watching movies, I'm always, that guy looks like he, you know, or her, you know. Either way, theater background.
Right.
There's something more to them,
more to that performance.
Yes. Yeah. And his phenomenal performance all the way through the movie is the capstone. Is at the very end when he is supposed to ride across that field. And you know, accept, you know, well, basically capitulate to Longshanks or the King of England.
Yeah.
And the way he's sitting on his horse, the look on his face of just utter the tear completely is completed at that moment.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's been pulled into all the way up to the end because he's got that dynamic with his dad and whatnot. But at that moment, it's torn asunder, and he chooses which side he's going to be on.
Oh. Yes, and such acting chops can be found, at least in Angus McFadden's career, at the University of Edinburgh, where he first attended. And then he moved on to the Central School of Speech and Drama in London, England.
Fantastic.
So we nailed it, yeah.
What else do you want to talk about?
So we've talked about the movie, we've talked about the battle scenes, we've talked about the characters, talked about the actors. What else is there?
How about some Christian themes, some tools that we can give the listeners so that when they're sitting on that double-decker couch with their friend or loved one watching Braveheart, one of the greatest, most beloved movies of all time, you can share little nuggets of the gospel. Just plant a seed so that maybe the door can be open, that you can speak more about Jesus and about salvation and about the eternal life that he wants to give us. You know, starting right at the very beginning of the film, Brendan, when William Wallace, when his father and his brother, they're killed in battle, and he's a little boy, and he finds himself alone, and he's at the funeral, and he's all by himself. Everybody else, all the other young kids, are there with their parents, and he's utterly alone. And then, as everybody is breaking up and spreading out, and he's standing there gazing upon their graves, and up comes a mysterious figure on this horse, just riding up and out of nowhere, and he comes up.
William, I'm your uncle.
This mysterious uncle. Argyle, he gets off the horse, and he looks like an imposing figure. Don't know what to make of Uncle Argyle yet. And he walks up to William and looks down on him.
You have the look of your mother.
Oh, that's tender. You know, he's looks like bad news, doesn't he, Brendan? He's
right.
got a big old scar across his face, knocked out, you know, messed up an eye. And oh, what's he going to do to this kid? Is he going to be, is this going to be like a wicked uncle kind of a, you know, are we going to be looking at a Cinderella type of situation? You know, no. Oh, you already know that he has tenderness in him. You have the look of your mother. Right off the bat, we can see, because we discover that Argyle is a good Christian, Brendan, and he's demonstrating in this scene pure and undefiled religion, the pure and undefiled religion that is described by the Lord's brother James in James 1:27. And we know we're so familiar with that. You know, pure and undefiled this religion is this, to visit orphans and widows in their hard spot, their hard place.
Philipsis.
So important. That verse is so important. And now, of course, he's going to take care of William. William doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to leave his home. But he must, because his life has changed now. And his uncle is in pursuit of what we are called as Christians to do.
We'll stay here tonight. Tomorrow, you'll come home with me.
I don't want to leave.
You didn't want your father to die either, did you? But it happened. Did the priest give a poetic benediction? The Lord bless thee and keep thee.
It was in Latin.
You don't speak Latin? Well, that's something we shall have to remedy, isn't
it? Oh, yeah.
You don't speak Latin? Oh, there's many things that you don't know, right, young William? Many things. But I am going to do what I am called as a Christian to do. I'm going to visit you in your time of distress, and I'm going to make a disciple of you, young William Wallace. And Uncle Argyle will teach him, will train him, will apprentice him.
Yes.
He says, come here, young William, follow me. What you see I do, you do the same. Right?
Yeah.
You follow me and you do the same. You're going to be my apprentice. And so William, before they leave, he has this vision of his dead father, who in a moment of reanimation, you know, this is a dream or a vision, gives his son a gift. Oh, Brendan, he gives his son a gift that will last him his entire life and, yay, even on into eternity. The simple words,
your heart is free. Have the courage to follow it.
Oh, man.
Son, you're not tied here anymore. You are not tied here. You have nothing here. But what you do have is this uncle, this good Christian uncle that is visiting you in your time of trouble. And he's going to take you, and he's going to teach you, and he is going to train you. He is going to apprentice you. He is going to make a disciple out of you. You are free now. You have started the Christian journey. You are free. You're not tied to that law that once was. You are free. But free from what? Well, we just kind of explain that. If you use the allegory and the metaphor of law, now William has become a Christian, a real Christian, and he's going to be trained and discipled just like what we're supposed to do. And this is really going to get to my point. This is where my point is really going to come to fruition, just a few more points down the line. Because as the next scene, this is a pivotal moment. They're at a, I don't know if it's a wake, it's a traditional Scottish memorial, let's say, mm-hmm. and men are playing the bagpipes and Argyle tells William, you know, they're playing an outlawed song on outlawed pipes. You know, they're not supposed to be doing that. And young Wallace is stirred to take up his uncle's sword, and he's holding it. He was preparing for battle, but Argyle tells him that he, before he takes up that sword, well, there's other things that you have to do first.
First, learn to use this Then I'll teach you to use this.
He tells William that he must prepare his mind and his heart first. Key. In fact, it's reminiscent of what his father told him earlier in the film before they went off to battle. You know, William says, I'm coming with you. I can fight. I can fight. And his father says, I know you can, son. I know you can. But it's our wits that make us men. Okay, what do those two things together mean? Okay, before you take up the sword, gotta learn to use your mind, your heart. It's our wits that make us men. Those two instances, Brendan, they remind me of our favorite books and movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They remind me of a quote from J.R.R. Tolkien's.
Screw tape letters, yes.
Oh.
Oh, wait.
J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, wherein Gandalf says of the creature Gollum in response to Frodo declaring that he deserved to die. Brendan, you have no idea what I'm talking about right here.
I'm zoning out right
now. Frodo says he deserved to die. And Gandalf says, deserves it? I dare say he does. Many that live deserve death. And some that deserve or that die deserve life. Oh, can you give it to them? Then do not be too eager to deal out death in judgment. For even the very wise cannot see all ends. Powerful story. We see this in action when William returns home. After many years, he returns home and they're having this wedding, you know, feast, and he's challenged to a test, you know, by Hamish to see who is the better man, right? A test of manhood. Well, William looks at him and says, you win.
Yeah. Right?
You win.
Yeah.
Okay. He's not going to fight. Why? It's not needed that. He's going to use his wits.
That's right.
Right? Okay, you win. I forfeit. Well, that's not good enough when we know what happens.
Which is a very comical scene, I think. Hamish, he throws the big rock, barely misses, yes. William, and then William throws the little pebble.
But see, his apprenticeship, his discipleship under the loving care of his uncle Argyle, taught him that this freedom that his heart has, the freedom that his heart has been given, it allows him and gives him the courage to seek to live peaceably with all people as much as lies within you, right?
Oh.
Romans chapter 12. So, what brought William Wallace back home? After so many years of discipleship, we find out on that rainy evening when he goes to pick up young, what do we say? How do you say her name?
Murren.
Yes. And takes her out on a ride and is talking with her. And this is a very important conversation right here.
Well, if I can ever work up the courage to ask you again, I'll send you a written warning first.
Oh, it wouldn't do you much good. I can't read.
Can you not?
Oh. Okay. Because she said to him, you know, something to the effect, do you always come and, you know, why did you go out riding with me? And she says, well, it was the only way to get rid of you, right? they're playing back and forth. And he says, yeah. Okay, well, the next time I'll work up the courage to send you a written, you know, a proposal, a request. That's not going to do you any good because I can't read. And then look what he does right here.
Well, that's something we shall have to remedy, isn't it?
Who said that?
The sock guy. Argyle.
Yes. You don't speak Latin?
Well, then I don't speak socks either. Yeah,
that's something we'll have to remedy then, isn't it? Oh. Same words, Brendan.
Ooh. Are you going to teach me to read them?
If you like.
Right?
And what language?
Are you sure enough now?
That's right. Are you impressed yet?
No. Why should I be?
Parce que chaque jour.
Do that standing on your head and I'll be impressed.
Might kill the fly up, but I'll try.
Oh, right? God, you certainly didn't learn any manners on your travels.
Well, the French and the Romans have far worse manners than I.
You've been to Rome?
My uncle took me on a pilgrimage.
What was it like?
Rien qui approchait d'un beauté.
that mean?
Beautiful, beautiful.
But I belong here.
But I belong here. Okay, Brendan, they're having fun. You know, it's a young man and a young lady, and they're, you know, bantering back and forth, and, oh, you're showing off. But he starts to speak the language of love to her. And that, you know, that reminds me of things that Paul wrote. And, and you know, the language, if I speak the language of angels and men but have not love, well, he's speaking the language of love with love. And it all comes down to this. I've come home, and I'm going to teach you. And I'm going to disciple you, just like my uncle, my good Christian uncle Argyle did for me. I saw him do it because he told me to follow along and watch what he does. And oh man, okay, I want to jump to the key text right now. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Philippians 3:17. Be imitators of me, brothers and sisters, and watch carefully those who are living this way, just as you have us as an example. Follow, watch what I'm doing, do the same thing. That's what Paul says. See, what William's uncle did for him was to disciple him to perfection. What does that word perfection mean? How do we understand that in New Testament terms?
Complete.
Yes.
Full circle.
Yes.
Not lacking in anything.
Yeah. And I think that William Wallace in this film projects that. So let me give you a couple more key verses to back that up, that concept of perfection. It doesn't mean without flaws. It means a completeness, and you are constantly working to that. And Paul in Philippians chapter 3 says, brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself to have attained this perfection. Instead, I am single-minded. I'm not that double-minded man that James talks about. I am single-minded, forgetting the things that are behind. You didn't want your father to die now, did you? I don't want to leave. And you didn't want your father to die, did you? You have no control over that. Forget those things that are behind and reach for the things that are ahead. I mentioned James. Let's go there because they're working in tandem here. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. My brothers and sisters, consider it nothing but joy when you fall into all sorts of trials. Whoa. If you apply that to young William Wallace, I don't want to leave. You don't want your dad to die either. Consider it all joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect effect, your complete effect, so that you will be perfect and complete, not deficient in anything. And because he was discipled well, It's fitting that at the very end, before his death, he prayed to God. So let me die well. I'm afraid, but let me die well. And he did. And it's because, Brendan, he was discipled to perfection by Uncle Argyle. Now, that is a picture of Christianity. What we are to do. We talked about this on that episode of Theonauts. Sometimes there are Christians out there that just weren't discipled well. And so we have to do that. Those who can need to disciple those well. And you may come up with a William Wallace of your very own. Wait, anything they want to add to that? Any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
No, I think you hit it. And I say that because it segues perfectly into what I'm about to talk about.
Oh, good. We got a twofer.
Yes, we have a two for one here at FCC. Now, you spoke about how influential William Wallace is on the people around him. One person in particular doesn't fully understand how influential Wallace has been on him until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And that is Robert the Bruce. Now, Robert the Bruce, he is the Scottish prince in line to inherit the crown from his ailing noble father.
Leprosy.
Yeah, leprosy and,
Spoiler alert.
Go ahead.
His dad has leprosy.
Of course, if you all read your history books like you should, you would know that already. But, just the way they depict that in the film.
Yeah. The way it progresses.
Yeah. And now the problem is his father sympathizes with the English and will pour out Scottish blood in order to greedily keep his power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that gets back to my idea of the Judaizers.
Yeah.
You know, there's people that are stirring up the pot and getting people knocked off, you know, off their course. You know, yeah.
All because he wants his family, he wants himself and his family to be
in a position of power.
In the power. He wants the it crowd.
Yes. Yeah. He wants that seat at the head of the table.
He wants that status.
Yes.
Thankfully, though, Robert is gravitating toward the freedom from the English rule and supplementation that's killing Scotland, because it is. It's separated the noble.
Oh, yeah.
It's separated the noble from the clansmen.
Yep.
And there's even a quote. Oh, go ahead.
Brilliant tactics. Brilliant tactics of war without even having to fire a shot. It's like Cold War.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I would even say another brilliant tactic, which we won't go into very much, but that rule that he establishes at the beginning.
First night.
Yeah, the Prima Nocturne.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yep.
All right. Now, the only thing is that at first, Robert the Bruce is too scared to initiate any change himself. Because, and you know, just to clarify just a little bit, I would say it's an even blend of fear and comfort.
Yeah.
Because he's comfortable.
Yeah.
He likes the way that he's been living for the past few years.
Hey, his dad has set him up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's a trust fund kid.
Yeah, there you go. That is until Robert is inspired by this gritty, mangy folk hero named William Wallace.
Yeah.
Ho, ho, ho. Who, quote, kills men by the hundreds and could consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his... Well, you get it. And now, it's interesting whenever these two characters meet, and they always go off into side conversations away from the crowd, which I think is really special, especially for Robert, who, when he first gets with William, he tries to quench William's fire. However, he is shut down almost immediately.
Now tell me, what does that mean, to be noble? Your title gives you claim to the throne of our country. But men don't follow titles. They follow courage. Now our people know you. Noble and common, they respect you. And if you would just lead them to freedom, they'd follow you. And so would I.
Hmm. Oh, I just had a revelation during this quote.
What?
He talks about freedom, and what's resonating so much with Robert is that William is speaking the truth.
Yes, yes.
And what does Jesus say about the truth in regards to freedom?
Set you free.
The truth will set you free.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
I don't know why I didn't think of that earlier. And later on, in another chance encounter, Robert comes to William and confesses that, yeah, he's afraid of what might happen if he takes the same rebellious steps that William has taken. But the latter, again, encourages the former. He spurs him to good works.
Help me. In the name of Christ, help yourselves. Now is our chance. Now. If we join, we can win. If we win, well, then we'll have what none of us have ever had before. A country of our own. You're the rightful leader. And there is strength in you, I see it.
You see, you know, Robert is afraid, and yet he's got this mad folk hero who can do amazing, extraordinary things. He's got this guy calling him the rightful leader of Scotland. Yeah, William Wallace, he can lead the Klansmen. They're tied up with him. And he can even lead noble sympathizers. But Robert the Bruce is the rightful leader of Scotland, and William Wallace can see that he has strength. How would that feel to you if you were a noble, kind of afraid of change, but you know the truth, and you know the truth has to come from change.
Yeah.
And you have this epic hero come tell you that you have strength. This guy recognizes that you have strength. What?
Yeah.
That's earth shattering.
Yes.
To Robert the Bruce so far. To where at the end of the movie, after Wallace's death, and when Robert is supposed to join with the English and officially unite the Scottish and the English, Robert has a change of heart, and it's because of William's example.
You have bled with Wallace! Now bleed with me!
You have bled with Wallace. Now bleed with me.
Yep, yep.
And at that moment, at that exact moment, the Scottish army turns on the English. They have it out in the battlefield. And
Mad-Eye Moody throws a sword.
Oh, man. Oh. Yes. And that is what ultimately gives Scotland their freedom.
Yes.
And in all of that, I just want to point out the fact that William Wallace has the gift of encouragement. And we can see the after effect of that encouragement through Robert the Bruce.
Amen.
The key text, and I think we've actually had it as a key text before.
That's okay.
You know what? That's okay, because it so applies. Hebrews 10:24. And let us take thought of how to spur one another onto love and good works. I'm telling you, man, that's what it is.
You know what this is? Both Michael and Brendan step up to the plate. Here comes the pitch.
At the same time.
Boom! It's good. Yeah. Both on the bat. It's over the wall. The grand slam home run. This is an episode to go down in the FCC history books. We see clearly here. We just see the Christian life right here, all the way from start to finish. And if you take freedom in the freedom that we have in Christ, Christian freedom, we are not bound to the law. We're under grace. And so we are, as we mentioned on a past episode of Youth Challenge today, we are now free to perform.
Yes.
Okay. Wallace wants that because he saw his uncle demonstrate these things. Follow me as I do. You do the same. Come along. Follow along, young William. What you see me do the same.
Okay.
And Wallace wants that freedom. His dad told him, your heart is free now. Okay. And then he goes, and you have Robert the Bruce, who is stuck with these Judaizers that they don't like freedom. They like comfort. Oh, but Robert the Bruce, he likes freedom, and he sees what William's doing, but he's not able to take those steps on his own until, but William Wallace, the encourager, says, no, come along, brother. Step into freedom. And the war is fought, and the war is won, and Christians are free in Christ. What a powerful movie for sharing the gospel with your friends and loved ones. Wow!
Yeah, it's really a good one, huh?
Yes, it is.
You wait till we get to the Lord of the Rings, Brendan.
Wait, when are we doing that?
Soon.
Okay.
Soon, Grasshopper. Okay. What else? Anything else? Anything that we want to tack on to this?
No, man, I think we got it.
Boom! Brendan, any listener feedback?
Nope, not for me.
You know what? Okay. Something's wrong. Something is wrong. We've already challenged people a couple episodes ago when we had nothing and haven't heard from us. Either we are doing something completely wrong on this show, so much so that people have to turn it off. I can't even stand listening to these guys. These guys are so far off base that it's remarkable that lightning hasn't come down from the heavens and consumed them right in the spot. So either that's the case.
That's some bold talk right there.
Or what we're saying is so profound that you're left speechless
without
afterwards.
Speech.
Right. You know, so we got it. We need the listener feedback. We're coming up on our 1 year anniversary of Finding Christ in Cinema.
Oh, and, man, we are.
And we are really wondering if there's a future for this particular show. Okay. We're just wondering,
again, if there is a future for this particular show. Almost a year. We're getting no reviews in the iTunes. I don't know about Stitcher. I don't go and check that, but because iTunes is the number one place where people get podcasts. We're not getting email. We're not getting voicemail. We're not getting tweets. We're not all kinds of things. So are we doing something wrong? Or are we doing something so remarkably right that nothing else needs to be said? So that's the challenge today for you guys. You gotta talk to us. Let us know. Let us know what you think. If anything, are you listening? Hello. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, what you said.
Okay. How about moving right on to the lightning round? What do you got?
I just want to take a couple seconds, hopefully 60, to talk about a new band that I found.
Oh.
And one that I'm starting to fall in love with.
Okay.
They are called the Grey Haven.
Ah-ha-ha. Ah! Lord of the Rings!
Excuse me, the Grey Havens.
Lord of the Rings!
Yes.
Middle Earth!
Yes. But I didn't find them because of that, so...
Obviously.
Okay, so, this is a husband and wife duo, David and Alicia... Oh, I lost their last name. Radford. David and Alicia Radford. Now, you may recognize the name David Radford from American Idol back in 2012.
Nope.
Oh, and I know you don't, but the listeners might, Michael. Oh. The listeners.
Oh, okay.
And he and his wife, they've started a new little musical project, and to quote David, he says, "We are seeking to illustrate gospel truths vividly through lyric and song."
Oh,
yes, firing up the imaginations of both the believing and secular listener. We desire our music to be edifying to believers and evangelistic at some level to the hearts and imaginations of non-believers.
Okay.
And I think with their new EP, and Michael, you're the recording engineer, what does EP stand for?
Well, extended play.
And what does that mean?
Well, it's a single is two songs.
Okay.
Well, at the least, it's one song. At the most, it's two. If you have three up to like nine songs, then that's an extended play. And then from there, you go to LP, long play.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
There you go.
I did not know that. I would just say that their new EP, Where Eyes Don't Go, is available now at on their website, which I have a link in the show notes. Also available at Bandcamp. And if anything, please go to this. Go check out this EP and specifically the songs Gray Flowers and Train Station.
Okay.
That's, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Hey, all right. You know, on Bandcamp, I think that's the site where you can give them a donation and download the tracks.
Yes.
It's like, you know, name your price type of thing. Good deal.
Well, no. Bandcamp, there is the $8.
Oh, okay.
You do pay, that's Noise Trade.
Okay.
Where you can do the donations. But I don't know if it's available there or not.
Scratch what I said. Listen to Brendan. What else? I don't have a lightning round.
No, that's it from me.
All right. Hey, breaking news. Check it out. From firstshowing.net, Summit wants Tom Cruise to mentor Highlander in movie reboot. What?
I used to be a dragon.
It's been over a year since visual effects supervisor Cedric Nicholas Troyan was set to make his directorial debut on Highlander, a reboot of the film franchise of the same name that's set up at Summit Entertainment. Ryan Reynolds was once going to star in the film. Now, he can only do comedy and rom-coms. But fell away from the project this summer. The hunt is still on to find someone to take the lead role, and they might get a boost to finding a big name because The Rap is looking to land a superstar for the role of Ramirez, the man who mentors and trains the immortal Scottish swordman William Wallace. No, seeking revenge against a barbarian chasing him across time.
Ooh.
There can be only one, Brendan. Yeah, we'll have to look into that. Keep an eye on that. It's Tom Hanks, so it can't be that. I mean, no, it's not Tom Hanks. It's Tom Cruise.
FCC's not very own.
No, they're not our own. Hey, What are we? Hey, well, let's throw out the challenge here. What Christian themes did you find in Braveheart?
Surely, in 2 hours and 57 minutes,
you found something.
Hopefully.
Now, even if you want to tell Brendan and I that we fell off the turnip truck. We missed the boat
yesterday.
We are so wrong. That's fine. Tell us something. Anything. We'll take it. Brendan, what are we going to do next week or next time?
Well, Michael, we've been talking about it for a while.
What? Lord of the Rings?
No.
Star Wars?
No.
Uh-huh.
No. And I would say that for this film, you may want to get out your double-decker couch.
Finally, the Lego Movie.
Yep. And you know, I would say that it would have taken numerous times to analyze this film, but I bet we can get it on first try.
Yeah, first try. Hey, cool. Because so is it next week? We're actually recording on Tuesday.
Yeah, next week we will be recording on Tuesday.
Because then that means that next week is Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. And then the following week, we're going to jump into...
We're starting into our Christmas movies.
Yes, we are. What are we going to do first?
Well, first we are going to do, like I said at the beginning, we'll do the Patrick Stewart version of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Yes.
I cannot wait.
And actually, the plan with A Christmas Carol is to keep the story, keep it in the rotation... But look at a different film adaptation each year.
Yeah, that would be very nice.
Hopefully
each year. Well, if we can keep the show going.
Lord willing.
Lord willing. If there's a need for the show, then it'll be around next year. But, so you have we've given you the next two movies that we're going to watch.
Yeah.
Here on Finding Christ in Cinema. The Lego Movie and the Patrick Stewart version of A Christmas Carol. Do you have things that you want to add? Do you want us to make sure that we don't miss in these films? You need to get that information to us any way that you can. We will run down all the ways to contact us forthwith, because everything that you need is right here at Finding Christ in Cinema. We're part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. You can visit us on our official website for all those links to all the ways to contact us at christincinema.com. Send email to fcc@gctnetwork.com.
Call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN. And for those without letters on the phones, that's 507-407-4286. Now, if you would just like to listen to the podcast, you can find us at iTunes, as if you didn't like falafel.
It's ghastly.
You didn't even... If you want to find us on Stitcher, as if you didn't like falafel...
Love duct tape.
Or you just want to find us on TuneIn Radio, as if you didn't like falafel.
Well, I don't like falafel.
There it is. Just search all the stores for Finding Christ in Cinema.
Well-mannered frivolity.
And for all the content that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, get over to the official website at gctnetwork.com and check out shows like The Theonauts, where you get a whole lot
baffling,
of...
Baffling, bumbling band of baboons.
Oh, wait, that's only when we're on.
Oh!
Brendan Taylor, anything else?
You take the higher road and I'll take the low road and I'll get the brave heart before he...
And that is a wrap!
There's no such thing as magic.
Wait, that was the first time you talked.
I'm a miracle man.
Come on, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
Why?
A sad, strange little man.
I don't understand.
I'm hitting them all.
Have you ever heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
The air got to it.
Why? The air got to it.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission Transmission
at gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission Transmission.